ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Well, welcome into another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, everyone. I'm Frank LaRosa. Scott Marsh is there. Scott, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Frank. Can't wait for the show.
We've had some fun this week. You and I got to play in a new car dealers tournament at Northridge Country Club, and you actually had a pretty good round that day. My assessment of my round would be, I probably should have withdrawn after the second hole, but we're actually going to learn how to deal with that today on the show, because Drew Millard is the author of a book called How Golf Can Save Your Life. So we're going to learn how I should have dealt with that better, I guess.
Well, hopefully has a lot to say for both of us, because there's obviously times when I walk off the golf course and I'm not feeling great about it either. So that's a pretty weighty title, and I'm looking forward to finding about what all that means.
I have to say that Northridge Country Club was in incredible shape. The Bermuda fairways that they have, the ball set up really nicely. The greens, boy, they were driving us nuts. The flags were in some interesting positions, but it all around, what a beautiful golf course that is.
Northridge is fantastic, and that was a great tournament, and we had a great time. And yes, I love that course, and it was immaculate.
I actually got out twice this week, because I was able to play over the weekend with the G-Man, and we played out at Mather, and that course obviously was in great shape as well. It's this time of year, the golf courses are pretty much at their best. You know, they're starting to grow in. The greens are all looking good. They haven't been chewed up yet. The aeration has taken effect, and it's good golf.
It's good golf, and I think this year with all the rain, the rough is lush, the fairways are green, so it's just, to your point, it's the best time ever almost to be out on a golf course.
Also on the show today, Andy McDowell, our friend, the executive director at the Fortinet Championship. He's in his second year there now. I say second year because he had a kind of a short start on the first year, but he's had a full year under his belt now. And we're looking forward to hearing about the Fortinet Championship.
Yeah, that's an awesome tournament coming up in September. You and I are going to be involved with that. Our station will be as well. I can't wait to hear about all the new changes and things going on.
You know, and they have invited me back to MC the media day press conference as well. And so I'm looking forward to that and talking to the folks there as well.
Yeah, that's going to be a blast in July.
All that and more coming up on this edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome in. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. He's Scott Marsh. And Scott, it's really exciting this time of year as we begin to think about professional golf coming back to Northern California.
It is. This is a great time of year. We're getting into the summer months, which means we're heading towards September, and we're really starting to look forward to the Fortinet Championship coming back our way.
You know, it's been really exciting to have that tournament over at Silverado Resort and in Napa. And you and I were there last year and the year before as well. But what I find really, really exciting about that is, you know, you've got some of the top players in the world playing, but you're at a resort that is that sort of breeds relaxation. It's an incredible vibe that happens at that tournament, and we're going to talk more about that with Andy McDowell coming up. But what's your take on that?
Well, first of all, you're in Napa, Frank, so you absolutely can't beat that. It's a perfect location for a PGA event. It's not just about the golf, which is fantastic, but of course the wine and everything else that you can have involved in the area. It's one of the most fan-friendly events on the tour.
Well, we're gonna find out more about that and get the official word on all of that from Andy McDowell. Andy is the executive director of the Fortinet Championship and a friend. And Andy, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Frank Scott. Thanks for having me on.
I can tell your hair is actually not on fire, but I have the notion that at any moment it could just burst into flames. You guys are this obviously is a year-round project, but as you get closer to September, I'm sure your days are pretty hectic.
No doubt. We're 110 days to tournament week, and the closer you get to that date, the more things that pop up on the radar. But having spent the last 7 to 8 months planning it, there's a lot of anticipation to get to that date and see some changes and see the fruits of the labor come to life.
I'm guessing that this is a much more comfortable year for you. You came in last year kind of at the end of planning, and now you've had a full year under your belt. What's your feeling about this particular tour event, and I guess your comfort level now being executive director and moving forward?
Good question. Last year I started Monday of tournament week. I had the fortune to sit in on a few weeks of planning calls, but literally day one, we had sponsors showing up for our Monday pro-am, and we were selling tickets, and we were getting ready for the professionals to show up, and I had the perspective to attend the event for 4 years as a spectator and as a media partner. And so I think it was very helpful to me because we're a golfing family. My kids are 18 and 15. My daughter's a competitive high school golfer. My son played junior golf. So we loved attending it. We loved how close we could get to the players. My daughter got a chance to meet Justin Thomas 1 year, and she still has his hat up on her mantle. He actually gave it to her when he autographed it. So I knew what the tournament and professional golf and golf as a sport meant to my family. So when the opportunity popped up, it was a pretty quick decision for me. And to now look at the planning and my role through that lens as a spectator and through the lens of my kids has really helped me as we try and do all we can to enhance this event and make it the best we possible can for our PGA Tour players, for our sponsors, and for our spectators.
We're going to get into this a little more a little later, but as you were telling the story about your daughter in the hat and Justin Thomas, what was going through my mind is how really fan friendly this particular tournament is. And again, as Scott and I were talking, I think it has something to do with the setting. I think the players kind of relax when they come here too. But when I describe the Fortinet Championship, I think fun and relaxation is really what comes out first in my mind.
Yeah, and the beauty about golf, whether it's a Fortinet Championship or any other event out there, is golf's so unique in that just about every seat you have is the equivalent to a courtside seat at a Warriors game or a front row seat next to the dugout in a professional baseball game, and there's certain parts of the course where congestion may be you're two or three people deep, and there's certain parts of the course where you can bring your chair and sit down and watch JT or Max Homa or someone else have a conversation with their caddy about what shot they're going to hit on that tee box, and so it's just so accessible compared to other things. And some of us may talk about how we played high school baseball or how we played high school football, and we may know what Brock Purdy's going through, but it's pretty rare that you and I, Frank, can sit there and say, you know what? I played that course and I had that same putt that Max Homa has now. Let's see how he's going to handle it compared to me. Unfortunately, odds are they're usually much better at that putt than you and me.
But you're absolutely right. That is some of the magic and the beauty of the game to walk the same fairways that some of the greats did. And you do this at any course around the world, but certainly to have it right here in your own backyard and having had the chance to play Silverado so many times, you're exactly right. I mean, you know that they're gonna that they're their resolution of the shot is more than likely going to be nine times better than yours, but to be able to compare the fact that you were there, it's pretty exciting.
You know, you look at, you know, the peaks and the valleys. You know, one of the tough situations last year was, you know, on our 18th hole, Danny Willett, who's a tremendous player, you know, hit his approach shot to 43 inches, and Homa was in the bunker, and he came out of the bunker into the rough, and Homa chipped in, and the crowd went nuts, and that's like the big moment that everyone remembers, and it was the Sports Center top 10. But I think we've all been in Danny Willett's shoes. Like, it made me feel a little bit better to know that if a pro can three putt from 43 inches, I shouldn't feel that bad when I do it two or three times every Sunday morning.
I don't think we want to paint the wrong picture that we've got pros fumbling around. It's pretty spectacular.
It's rare.
That goes on there. Yeah, you're absolutely right. We're in the middle of some changes that happening with the FedEx Cup schedule, and let's talk about I'm never quite sure how to date it, you know, because it kind of runs through a couple of years, and the Fortinet Championship this year, you guys are the only tournament in September. That's really odd when your expectation is that you. You know, there's some golf every week, but this is the only PGA Tour tournament in September.
Correct. And we're really excited about where we sit on the calendar this year. So just like you said, Frank, we're the only PGA Tour event in September. We're 2 weeks after the conclusion of the FedEx Cup playoffs, and we're 10 days prior to the Ryder Cup. So certainly in any year, it's an appealing tournament to pros and families and caddies, because it's Napa. It's usually gorgeous weather. It's wine. Our partners at Alpha Omega help us put on a fantastic event for the PGA Tour players' wives on Tuesdays. Fortinet last year launched the inaugural Bushwood Classic, which was closest to the pin contest we did for the caddies, and now where we are on the schedule, I think it's even more appealing to the players too, compared to some of the tournaments we've butted up against in recent years. So we're going to market this to the Ryder Cup players as a fantastic place to come and prepare and hone their game before they go over to Italy. And we're certainly going to market it to the dozens of quality players who aren't going to be playing in the Ryder Cup, who may not want to take 6 or 7 weeks off before that next event in October.
Scott, you're looking forward to this, I know. What's on your mind for Andy? You know, I know you had a question you wanted to ask him, and I keep asking all the questions, so let me get out of your way a second.
Well, you're asking a lot of good questions, but Andy, I have a ton of questions as well. I know that you're making some changes to the course layout this year, and I'm really interested to find out the reasoning behind that, and if you can kind of explain what that's going to look like.
Yeah, we, you know, when I came in and our staff huddled and we met with the PGA Tour to go through, you know, a usual post-event debrief and planning process. We looked at it and we partnered with Fortinet and said, this is going to be the 10th year at Silverado. And we've got some new blood and energy with the schedule and, you know, what happened with Full Swing and what that Netflix series did to bring all kinds of non-golfers into the game, and we just like stepped back and decided to look at the event, look at the course through a fresh lens, and our partner Silverado have been fantastic. It's a beautiful course and property, and so we decided to look at it in terms of what can we do to elevate the experience for the players, how can we elevate it for the sponsors, and how can we elevate it for the spectators. And one of the things we're doing that hits all three of those is changing the routes in which the players play it in. So the last five holes are going to be different. It'll, for the Silverado diehards, holes 8 and 9 turn into 14 and 15, and 10 and 11 turn into 16 and 17. So from a spectator perspective now, we have this really gorgeous five-hole loop that's all in a very condensed area and a very easily accessible place for them to walk, to congregate. And for the TV viewers, and we think for the players, one of the exciting things we did within that loop is Silverado members hole number 11, which is their signature par three, possibly the signature hole on the course, a beautiful par three over the lake, kind of right there where Johnny Miller grew up. We're turning that into hole 17. And we really wanted to bring that iconic hole into the finishing stretch to showcase the resort, showcase Napa, let people see it on TV. But we also wanted a par three late in the round. And so we're excited for this new route. We've got how we play the other 13 holes is about 90% done. We have some ongoing conversations with the PGA Tour and our rules officials and our marshals committee about how we get players from point A to point B and spectators in the safest and most efficient way possible. So we'll be announcing the entire 18-hole layout as we get closer to the tournament. But what we're doing on the last five holes is done, and we're real excited about it.
Listening to you talk, Andy, you know, it's amazing how much goes into putting on an event like this that, you know, basically lasts a week for the public. But you talk about talking with the rules officials and the PGA and, you know, getting your volunteers and making sure food is online and available and restrooms and so on and so forth. The planning for this kind of thing is just enormous. And obviously experience is really important here. But how when you sit down the day after this year's tournament, what goes through the process to prepare for next year?
Well, usually you're pretty brain dead for about 48 hours once you get through it. I came to this job from a 25-year stint in college sports marketing, and what I tell my friends who ask these kinds of questions is every day during tournament week is like running a college football game. They're 12-hour days. On our concert days, they're 14 to 15-hour days. Where I had the advantage working in college sports is that in between football games, though, we had 6 days to assess and respond and prepare. And in golf, we have 6 to 7 hours. So we do our best once things get running and rolling. And then it's usually a good 30-day process to come up with our review. And there's just so many stakeholders involved from our title sponsor, Fortinet, to the PGA Tour, to Silverado, to working through agents and managers and some of the folks on the tour that communicate with the players. And then, you know, it takes us about 1,000 volunteers to run this tournament, and they're really the lifeblood of the event. So we have a process to get feedback from the volunteers. So that all takes a good 30 to 45 days just to gather that feedback. And then we figure out what worked well, and we figure out what we want to get better at. And then we start planning for next year.
Well, I'll tell you, you just made me a little brain dead kind of thinking about all of that. So I'm going to take a break here and pay some bills. We're going to come back and talk with Andy McDowell, Executive Director of the Fortinet Championship, right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back in. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. You are listening on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. He's Scott Marsh. Andy McDowell, the Executive Director of the Fortinet Championship, which comes to Silverado Resort in Napa in September, is our guest today. Andy, appreciate you spending some time with us. You know, Fortinet is a name that basically came out of nowhere for the uninitiated, and in many ways rescued the tournament at Silverado and Napa. Tell us a little bit about who Fortinet is and why there's such a fascination with being involved in the world of golf.
Fortinet's a industry-leading cybersecurity company based down in Sunnyvale. And they became our title sponsor in 2021. And you're exactly right. They saved it. The previous agreement with the previous title sponsor expired the spring of 21. Certainly was not the most ideal time to be in the marketplace pitching multi-million dollar sponsorship deals. And interesting enough, the the title sponsorship deals are actually negotiated and finalized between the PGA Tour and the sponsor. Our tournament staff handles all the local sponsorships. So the PGA Tour did a great job finding Fortinet. They came on board. It was like March or April of 2021, had a handful of months to plan that first tournament. And that was really their first dip in the water in sports marketing. And if we look at it just over 2 years later, Fortinet now sponsors 41 golf tournaments across the globe. There's 18 in total in the PGA Tour. There's 17 that lead up to this. Up in Canada, they sponsor the Canadian Tour's version of the FedEx Cup. It's called the Fortinet Cup. They're the official cybersecurity partner of the DP Tour in Europe. And they sponsored one event down in Australia. And I know they're looking to expand from there. And they've just done a phenomenal job in finding their niche and making it work. And the way they activate around our event and the others with bringing their customers and prospects on site, hosting a security summit at Silverado. They run them through two different waves. They have a group of customers and prospects that comes in Monday through Wednesday, and then a different group that comes in Thursday through Saturday. And it's interesting because Fortinet doesn't speak at this conference. They're the host, and they bring in industry leaders to speak about cybersecurity, but it's not about them and pitching their products. It's about them putting on an experience for people in their industry who want to learn more.
You know, Scott and I have had the chance to meet some of the upper management, and we've been really impressed with not only their business acumen, but the fact that when we saw them kind of come in and as we said, rescued the tournament from that point till today, what they've done has just been remarkable. It seems like if we're not going to do it first class, they're just not going to do it. And that's pretty impressive.
They strive for greatness in all that they do. And Jim Overbeck, who we deal with day to day, is the most passionate, engaged title sponsor in the country, and we love working with them every day. But when I started, the focus was, hey, our branding is in good shape, and the security summit's in good shape. Andy, we want to partner with you and your staff to do all we can to make sure that the tour players and our spectators and our sponsors have the best experience possible. And that's been really refreshing, because sometimes the brands are more focused on the brands. In this case, the brand wants to grow the tournament and make it as big and successful as possible.
You talk about the experience, and I alluded to it earlier, and I think Scott would agree how much fun the tournament is. But it really is. It's not just going to a golf tournament. I mean, there's so many things for people to do. Even a couple of folks that one likes golf and one doesn't, both can be entertained at the tournament. Tell us, Andy, what anybody that has not been to a PGA Tour event, but certainly specifically not to the Fortinet Championship at Silverado Resort, what can they expect when they walk on the grounds?
Beautiful setting. We'll have a new local concession area this year with food trucks and local restaurants. We want people to walk in and know and feel that they're in Napa. We're going to have a new wine bar area where it's really our counter to people that would rather wine taste than maybe come to the golf tournament. Well, we can deliver that experience on the course now, and we'll have just one particular wine bar near the entrance where our spectators can sample 18 to 20 different wines. Our concert series runs Friday and Saturday night. Last year, we moved the concerts to the South Course. There's two courses at Silverado, the Championship North Course and the South Course. And we moved the concert stage to the second fairway in the South Course. And if there's a more beautiful setting for a concert, I haven't seen it yet. And that's a neat event because that brings people who may not have come to a golf tournament if it wasn't for the concerts, and they walk away with a great experience. Kids 15 and under are free with a paid parent. So it's a family event. It's food. It's wine. It's a beautiful setting. It's music. I think it just appeals to so many different kinds of people.
Scott, when you were driving home last year after being at the tournament, what was going through your mind?
Oh, I just had a great time because, you know, went for the full day for the event, stayed for the concert afterwards. I'm really looking forward to seeing the new concert venue. I'm interested in seeing the concert lineup, which I know you guys are close to announcing as well, which will be great. And I think for a lot of our people listening out there, Andy, I mean, they would love to be a part of this. And you talk about volunteers and so many people that are needed. How would somebody, are you still actively recruiting volunteers? And how would somebody go about becoming a part of the event that way?
We recruit volunteers on a year-round basis. It's one of the most important things we do. We have a staff of about 25 from our company, Sport 5, that comes in to manage and run the event. We partner with the PGA Tour. But most of the work is done by roughly 1,000 volunteers, and we can't do it without them. They're the lifeblood of the tournament. There's lots of information on our website, fortinetchampionship.com, about volunteer opportunities. No experience is needed, and you don't need to know a thing about golf. We've got 30 different committees that those 1,000 volunteers can choose to work under or work in. And I love talking to our volunteers. Last year, a lot of them work multiple PGA Tour events. We see quite a few folks go down to Pebble Beach for the AT&T. I met quite a few who went down to Phoenix for the WM. Even saw some when I went down and attended the American Express in La Quinta. And it's just a great experience for them to see behind the scenes action, help us raise money for charity, and get access to cool things that even our spectators don't. And some, you know, examples of the sorts of things that interested volunteers could get into, you know, it could be working on our hospitality committee, which is greeting our patrons and sponsors when they enter their hospitality venues, spotters, which is always fun, helping the pros find their balls in the rough, gallery management, merchandise, supply chain distribution. We need golf cart drivers to shuttle our ADA spectators. Like I said, there's 30 different areas that people can help. We see a lot of people come back year in and year out to do it. We do ask for a $50 donation that helps offset their $200 in apparel. They get daily food and beverage, access to a volunteer headquarter tent. They get access to the tournament and the concerts. They get a daily guest pass to bring anyone they want. And for our volunteers this year who work 20 hours or more, they get a second daily guest pass. And all that information is at fortinetchampionship.com. And we've got a staff that can take one-on-one questions or conversations should people have any questions. But that's one message I want to get across today. And I really appreciate the platform. But if you love golf, if you love people, if you love participating in things that benefit charity, please give it a look. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, and maybe you could talk about the charity aspect so much because the PGA donates so much to charity. Can you talk about this event and what the impact is?
So 100% of proceeds from all PGA Tour events are designated to charity. So the tour last year surpassed $3 billion in lifetime giving. Wow. Our tournament distributed just under $300,000 to about 8 to 9 local charities last year, and now that we're in year three with Fortinet and we've got some things figured out on the course, we have some very ambitious goals to grow those charitable distributions over the next 1 to 2 to 3 years. And so I think you'll definitely start to see a much bigger impact that we can make. And as that relates to volunteers, you know, for every volunteer we get, it's one less person we have to hire. So literally every volunteer we get helps us put more money in the charitable pool, and the vast majority of those funds stay in the Napa Valley.
Andy, when can we expect to hear about some of the players and the concerts and how we get tickets and all of that?
Concerts and tickets will be announced in mid-June. We historically target Father's Day week and U.S. Open week as a good time to go on sale. That's all dependent on when we get our concert acts finalized. We're really close on two, and hope to have those artists secured soon. So I'll just say for now, tentatively in mid-June, we'll go on sale for tickets. Player field, we know Max Homa's most likely going to be back as our two-time champion and a Fortinet ambassador. The rest of the player field will come together usually 2 to 4 weeks prior to the tournament. A lot of the top 50 to top 70 guys are going to see how they do in the three playoff events later in the summer. But we'll start to announce who's in our field, hopefully 2 to 3 weeks prior.
You know, it's an interesting question. As you were talking, I'm thinking, you know, you're so deeply involved in all the planning, and during that week, you know, it's Andy this, Andy that. But sitting here today, what are you most looking forward to at the Fortinet Championship this year?
I'm most interested to see how our spectators and our players react to the changes with the routing of the holes. That's probably number one. And I'm very interested to see if Max Homa is able to pull off a rare feat and win it three straight years.
Those are both pretty exciting things to look forward to. Scott, I don't know, the way Andy talked about what you get as a volunteer, we might be better off, you know, dropping the media badges and going down and be volunteers. What do you think?
I know you couldn't see me, but I was raising my hand and I was already looking up on the website what I could do to be a part of it.
I love it. We'll take you. It is a ton of fun, and it's such a great group of people, and they're so passionate about helping us put Napa in the best light possible and put the Fortinet Championship in the best light possible. So we'll take you both. We'll take your friends. We'll take your family. Let's get out there and have some fun.
You guys have always been very welcoming, very hospitable to us, and we appreciate the relationship and the friendship, and look forward to seeing you down the road, especially at Media Day, and continue to let our listeners here in Northern California know about the Fortinet Championship coming in September to Silverado Resort in Napa.
Yeah, thank you for the support and the opportunity.
This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. He's Andy McDowell, Executive Director of the Fortinet Championship. Scott Marsh and I will be back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back in to the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh. And Scott, I got an email, a release from a publicist a couple of weeks ago about a new book that had been written called How Golf Can Save Your Life. Sometimes when we're on the golf course, I'm not sure it's saving us.
But sometimes I feel it's how golf is ruining my life. Yeah,
but I was just fascinated by the title. And so we are welcoming in the author of that book, Drew Millard, who wrote the book, How Golf Can Save Your Life. That's a pretty bold statement there, Drew. How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me on.
It's obviously when someone writes something, we have what we call literary license. But The first chapter of your book is called How Golf Saved My Life. So, you know, what's that all about? How did it happen? Are you tell me about your golf career and how you got to this point.
I wouldn't call what I have going on a golf career. That would be more auspicious than maybe I deserve. But, you know, I started playing golf when I was a kid. It was a great way to bond with my dad, you know, when I was like 7 or 8. And from there, I started playing in tournaments in middle school, was never very good. Got on the high school golf team, was never very good then. But, you know, it was like a really fun experience and like a great way to, you know, just hang out with my friends. And then once I got to college, I sort of like played recreationally every once in a while. And I really, after that, just sort of like let the game go. I moved to New York, where I became a writer. Then I moved to LA, where I continued writing. And I was working in digital media, which is a really tough environment. You know, like something like this show, y'all have an audience who is loyal, and that's really admirable, especially because in digital media, those loyal audiences are much smaller. And instead, you are basically every single day, every article you put out is competing against everything else on the internet for attention. And so you have to be working fast and making things like really ridiculous and, you know, putting out like 3 or 4 articles a day or something, if like just you individually. And so that is a recipe that can lead to a lot of burnout. And that's really what happened to me in 2016. I got burned out. I got depressed. I moved back to where I grew up in Western North Carolina. And as part of my sort of recovery from everything I was dealing with, I picked up golf again for, you know, the first time in a few years, and really found that, you know, the experiences I was having on the course provided me with a lot of opportunity to think about sort of everything I'd been going through, mull over what I'd been talking to my therapist about. And really, you know, I was going in with no expectations. And so, you know, even hitting a horrible shot was like fun at the time. Yeah. And, you know, it was almost like play acting sort of actual recovery, because I would hit a bad shot, I would get in a bad situation, and I began sort of like training myself to think, okay, well, I'm in a bad spot, but I've always got another chance. I've always, you know, I can always get out of this. I'm always advancing the ball closer to the hole, to the ultimate goal, even if, you know, things are weird and it takes a while. Eventually I'll get there. And, you know, that really gave me a whole new perspective that allowed me to, you know, get back on my feet.
Many, many players and people that have been associated with the game over the years have said that golf is, you know, is the closest thing to life that that we can find as a sport. And certainly you've, you know, basically that, I'm guessing that's the basis of your book. You talk about, you know, you became a better listener, a better friend, a better son, and so on and so forth. These are things that certainly the first tee is, you know, is famous for in teaching these kinds of life skills to children at a young age. But for you to go back and kind of rediscover them is kind of a different way to come to the same conclusion, I'm guessing.
And, you know, the First Tee is such a great organization. I really admire what they do. And like the local chapter in Philadelphia, where I live, is also a really, really special chapter. They work a lot with kids from sort of not particularly great neighborhoods. And what they do by taking them to the golf course is they're not only, you know, teaching them these skills, but they're also just providing them with like green space, because these kids live in like the inner city, where there's not a lot of that. And they're also providing them with just a place where they can feel safe and be themselves, sort of a haven from the greater issues of like gun violence that aren't currently that are currently in the city where I live. And so, yeah, I mean, I love the first tee. And it's also interesting that you mentioned that because, or mentioned sort of coming to these skills as an older person, because, you know, ever since the pandemic started, there have been like, I think 2 million people who have started playing golf or gotten really into it. And a lot of those people are coming to it from a really different angle than a lot of the people who've been playing for years, where it's like they're using it as a way to like get outside, be in green space, hang out with their friends, and they're not really that concerned with how they're shooting. And it's just been like a fascinating thing to watch happen as I'm writing this book about sort of a lot of those same things.
You know, Scott, we make fun of our golf games a lot, and we talk about frustration with bad shots and everything. But I think you and I both agree every time we finish a round and shake a hand that that the experience that we've shared, you know, was much more than the game. It was the relationship and being out there.
I agree with that. I may not feel that way as I'm walking off the 18th green all the time. Drew, thanks for joining us. It's good to hear about you, and I appreciate you sharing your story. I always love people who are willing to open up and share. And I do find golf very therapeutic as well, as somebody who needs an outlet and can suffer with stress and anxiety and all of those things. Like when I go out to the driving range or I play with friends, it's a release for me. It's just a great distraction. It's a form of concentration that I can just kind of get my mind on a different wavelength. And I think you're absolutely right, especially at the pandemic, people found a new appreciation for being outdoors, what the value of maybe slowing down is a little bit, the value of just being with friends for a period of time. We kind of lost that in our society, and I hope that's something that we all carry back, and it's an important point to really consider. And that's really, to Frank's point, part of the overall appeal to golf is that it offers all of those things, and I don't know if we really thought about it in that light before.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, when I was writing the book, at some point the book sort of became a book. It became almost like a diary of, you know, the pandemic, which is not to say it's like a pandemic book, but, you know, it was like I sort of my full-time job was writing this book, and part of writing this book was playing a lot of golf so I could be thinking about golf. And, you know, even though it was like a weirdly, you know, nobody really knew what was going on, especially, you know, before we sort of understood the virus, before we had all of these like vaccines and stuff. And I was just like, yeah, I was just really sort of enjoying being in that space. And, you know, it's so interesting when you play golf with a stranger, you come away from that experience really, really knowing them, because you're watching them experience, you know, the entire range of human emotion, and they're watching you do the same. And it's just, you know, it's one of the few places where you can encounter someone from a wildly different walk of life with a wildly different perspective. And, you know, you are forced to get along with them because you're stuck with them. You know, this person, if you like met them, if you saw them tweet something and you didn't like, you might like get in an internet screaming match with them, but you can't do that because you're just playing 18 holes with them. You gotta see their perspective, and they have to see yours, or else neither of you will have a good time.
Yeah. How do you think playing golf has just made you a more well-rounded or just better person? You know, talk about how it really has helped your life.
I think that I am able to put things in perspective more. I am able to sort of assess something and say, okay, what is the best path forward? It's like, you know, when you like play a hole and it's like a dog leg right and you see the fairway sloping a certain way, you're like, okay, well, I need to play a cut, but except maybe if the fairway is sloping like, the opposite of the dog leg, maybe I need to like somehow weirdly like draw it in or like, hit a 3 wood or something. And so sort of that like immediate planning for, the next 4 moves or whatever, I think has been really, really helpful for me.
One of the fascinating things as I go down the chapter list, and I think we've been kind of talking around this, but I think it's your final chapter is how golf gave me the strength to suck. And I think that's a fascinating thought, and most golfers should be comfortable with their game, and I guess that's what you're saying,
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
we all want to be better. But the notion of having a comfort level with your game is really important.
And, to bring another sport in, my girlfriend and I have just started playing basketball, just like going to a court and shooting around for fun. And I have found that, when I'm really like concentrating on like my form and my technique when I'm taking a basketball shot, it never goes in. But if I just don't think about it and let myself shoot using what I've learned and trusting that, it's usually a much better shot. And, having that experience in the past few weeks has really made me realize, oh, that's the same thing with golf, where, if you're like, okay, I'm going to keep my elbow tucked because I've been like, slicing it or something. Somehow that will just lead to you coming even more over the top.
Yeah, in golf, we refer to that as the committee. I've got a committee that's in my head most of the time, and being able to kind of get one of them out at a time is helpful. But there's all those others left in there.
And,
Drew, go ahead.
I was going to say, and we all have the committee in our head basically all the time. And, if I'm writing something and I let the committee tell me what is and is not a good sentence to write, I'm never getting done. You got to let the committee go on lunch break so you can really be yourself.
Scott, the next time I start listening to voices in my head, just tell me the committee's got to go on lunch break.
I don't know if I can repeat that enough, Frank. That's a tough assignment you're asking me right there.
Drew Millard is the author of How Golf Can Save Your Life. How can we get the book, Drew?
The best way is probably to go on bookshop.org and search How Golf Can Save Your Life. That will allow you to buy it through an independent bookseller. But if you're feeling lazy, just go to Amazon, type in How Golf Can Save Your Life, and you'll get it in a day. Either one's fine.
Drew Millard, author of How Golf Can Save Your Life. You continue to play golf in Philadelphia. We'll do it out here in Sacramento, and who knows, someday we may meet on the first tee and try and figure out what's wrong with each of us. How's that?
Love that.
This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. We have wrapped up another hour, and Scott, it's always fun talking golf, and to have had Andy McDowell, the executive director of the Fortinet Championship, and Drew Millard with us today. It's been another good show.
It always is a great hour, Frank. It just goes too fast.
Back next week at the same time here on Sactown Sports 1140. Thanks for joining us. Keep it in the fairway.